Oh, how Pongo needed that drink.
And now stroll down to the pond with me, said the Colonel, gripping the handle of a little tin bucket in his teeth. You won't feel like trying to sleep any more, just at present.
Pongo felt he would never be able to sleep again.
I blame myself for letting you in for the shock, said the Colonel, as they went out into the early morning sunlight. Because you can't blame the Lieutenant. She's not a trained observer. When she told me the place was seething with Dalmatian puppies, I naturally thought she meant your puppies only. After all, 15 puppies can do quite a bit of seething. It was only yesterday, after I'd made the folly my headquarters and could see over the wall, that I found out the true facts. Of course, I sent the news over yesterday's twilight barking, but couldn't reach you.
How many puppies are there? Asked Pongo.
Can't tell exactly, because they never keep still. But I'd say, counting yours, getting on for 100.
100? They had reached the pond.
Yeah, have another drink, suggested the Colonel.
Pongo gulped down some more water, then stared hopelessly at the sheepdog. Colonel, what am I going to do?
Will your lady wife want just to rescue her own puppies?
She may at first, said Pongo, but not when she realizes it would mean leaving all the others to certain death.
Anyway, your pups aren't old enough for the journey, said the Colonel. I suppose you know that.
Pongo did know it. His plan had been to let his puppies stay at Hell Hall until they were a little bigger, while he and Mrs. kept watch over them, ready to rescue them if danger threatened. He told the Colonel this.
And that's exactly what you must do, said the Colonel.
But what about the other puppies?
I shall spread the news of them throughout England. Other parents may come to the rescue.
I doubt it, after all this time, said Pongo.
If the worst comes to the worst, would your pets give them a home?
Pongo couldn't imagine the Dearlys refusing to help any dog. But getting on for 100... Still, the drawing room was very large. I don't believe they'd turn them away, he said. But, Colonel, I could never get the whole lot of them to London.
Not as they are, of course. Every dog jack of them has to be trained. They must learn to march, to obey orders. I may teach the bigger ones how to forage.
I wouldn't mind learning that myself, said Pongo.
Splendid. Now, how about trying your mouth at carrying this pail? Now, that's a trick you ought to learn. No, hold your head further out. Then the pail won't bang into your chest. Excellent!
Pongo found he could carry the bucket of water quite easily. His spirits were rising now. With this wonderful old colonel to help him, he would rescue every puppy. He set the bucket down in the folly.
You're looking better, said the colonel. You may be able to sleep now. There's nothing more you and your lady can do until it's dark. Then you shall meet your family. Meanwhile, I'll send in word that you've arrived.
Something was puzzling Pongo. Colonel, why did Cruella steal so many Dalmatians? She can't want more than one Dalmatian fur coat. The sheepdog looked astonished.
Well, surely you know her husband's a furrier. I understand she only married him for his furs.
So that was it. Pongo had forgotten. But if the Devilles planned to sell Dalmatian coats to the public, then Hell Hall was nothing less than a Dalmatian fur farm. And no Dalmatian would ever be safe again, unless Cruella's career came to an end. I must cope with that when I get back to London, thought Pongo grimly, as he mounted the stairs. He found Mrs. stretched out on the bare boards by the window. She had watched until the puppies had all gone in, then toppled into sleep. He pulled straw around her, and lay down very close to keep her warm. She did not stir. His last waking thoughts were humble ones. He had expected the sheepdog to be some doddering old country gaffer. How much now depended on this shrewd, kind old soldier? It was dark when the colonel woke them.
All still well with the pups, but no news of any other parents over the twilight barking. I sent word of your safe arrival, and good wishes to you came pouring in. All dogdom awaits news from this quiet village. I've said you'll bark a few words yourself when you're fully rested.
Willingly, said Pongo.
Now down we go to dinner, said the Colonel.
They went down and had an excellent meal of sausages which the cat had collected during the day. She was away at the farm,
The Colonel said there would be hurt feelings if she did not join her pets at tea to drink a saucer of milk.
And I must go back later, because my young pet Tommy likes me there while he has his bath. So, let's be moving.
He rose and pushed open a window.
The defences of Hell Hall are childish, he said. What's the use of padlocked gates at the front when one can get into the back through this folly?
Pongo then saw that the folly had a door and a window opening onto the grounds of Hell Hall, as well as the door and window opening onto the heath, and was indeed a sort of gatehouse. The Colonel had originally entered through the window on the heath side. The door into the grounds was bolted on the Hell Hall side, so the Colonel led Pongo and Mrs. through the window.
"Now, we'll be cautious," he said. "That window might blow shut, and there's no handle on the outside, and it might take some time to unbolt this door."
He drew back the bolt on the door into the folly, pushed the door open, and rolled a heavy stone against it.
"Now, if you should want to get out in a hurry, but I don't think you will. Shouldn't wonder if you couldn't spend the night with your pups."
Mrs. gasped with delight and began to ask questions.
"I'll explain as we go," said the Colonel, starting towards Hell Hall.
A full moon was rising above the black house. "Colonel, what's that on the roof?" said Pongo. "Surely it isn't television here."
"Oh, yes, it is," said the Colonel, "and there's scarcely a cottage in the village hasn't got it since the electricity came. Mostly on the higher purchase, though there won't be much purchase here. I'm told the Baddens haven't paid anything for months."
He then outlined his plans, and it soon appeared that television played an important part in them. The Badden brothers were so fond of it that they could not bear any puppy to bark while it was on, and unless the puppies were warm, they barked like mad. The warmest room in the house was the kitchen, which was where the television set was. So that was where the pups now lived, unless they were taking exercise in the stable yard. Some pups liked watching the television, some just slept. Anyway, none of them barked, so the Baddens could enjoy themselves in peace. All this the Colonel had heard from Lucky during long barked conversations.
"That lad of yours is as bright as a button," said the Colonel. "He's months ahead of his age."
Pongo and Mrs. swelled with pride. The plan was that Lucky should bring his brothers and sisters out to the stable yard while the Baddens were watching television.
"But it will be too cold for them to stay out long," said the Colonel, "and I don't see why you shouldn't go back into the kitchen with them. Lucky tells me there's no light except from the TV screen, so if you crouch down, you should be quite safe. Even if the Baddens do see you, they'll just think you're two of the larger pups. But there's hardly any chance you will be seen, because Lucky tells me the Baddens stay glued to the TV until it ends, and then roll over and go to sleep. They've got mattresses on the kitchen floor. I see no reason why you shouldn't spend the night there. I'll call you at dawn, and you can get out before the Baddens wake."
Pongo and Mrs. thought this was a wonderful idea. "Can we sleep there every night?" asked Mrs. The Colonel said he hoped so, and that it was at night that the pups would have to be drilled and trained for their march to London.
"Lucky says nothing wakes the Baddens, so I plan to come into the kitchen. I shall hold classes there and drill 10 pups at a time in the stable yard. But you two must spend a quiet night there first, and report conditions to me."
By now they were almost at the stable yard.
"Don't tell me any more now, Colonel," said Pongo. "I'm too excited to take it in. Are you all right, Mrs.?"
For Mrs. was trembling.
"I can't believe I'm really going to see them," she said.
The Colonel opened the gate to the stable yard. Mrs. gave a soft moan and hurled herself across the yard. She had seen Lucky. There he stood at the back door, waiting for them. And behind him, in the long dark passage leading to the kitchen, were all his brothers and sisters. Who could describe what the mother and father felt during the next few minutes as they tried to cuddle 15 wagging, wriggling, licking puppies all at once? Everyone tried to be quiet, but there were so many whimpers of bliss, so much happy snuffling, that the sheepdog got nervous.
"Will they hear in there?" he asked Lucky.
"What, the Baddens?" said Lucky, rather indistinctly, because he had his mother's ear in his mouth. "No, they've got their precious television on extra loud."
Still, the Colonel was relieved when the first joy of the meeting was over.
"Quiet now," said Pongo.
"Quiet as mice," said Mrs.
but they were pleasantly surprised at how quiet the pups instantly were. The only sound came from some dead leaves stirred by 15 lashing little tails.
"Now, still," said Lucky. All the tails stopped wagging. "I'm teaching them to obey orders," said Lucky to the colonel.
"Goodbye, goodbye. Let's see, I made you a corporal this afternoon, didn't I? I now make you a sergeant. If all goes well, you shall have your commission next week. Now I'm off to see my little pet Tommy have his bath."
He told Pongo he would be back in a couple of hours.
Slip out and tell me what you think of things, or send the sergeant with a message.
"Won't you come in and see the TV, sir?" said Lucky.
"Not while the Baddens are awake," said the colonel. "Even they couldn't mistake me for a Dalmatian."
As soon as he'd gone, Lucky sent the other puppies to the kitchen, then took his father and mother in.
"You must stay at the back until your eyes get used to the dark," he said.
And indeed it was dark. The only light came from the television screen and the kitchen fire, which were at opposite ends of the very large kitchen. And as the walls and ceiling were painted dark red, they reflected no light. It was extremely warm, much warmer than one fire could have made it. This was because there was central heating. Cruella de Vil had put it in when she planned to live in the house. At last, Pongo and Mrs. found they could see fairly well. And it was a strange sight they saw. Only a few feet away from the television, two men lay sprawled on old mattresses, their eyes fixed on the screen. Behind them were ranged row after row of puppies, small pups at the front, large pups at the back. Those who did not care for television were asleep round the kitchen fire. The hot red room was curiously cosy, though Pongo felt it was a bit like being inside a giant's mouth. Lucky whispered,
"I thought we could settle Mother with the family, and then I could show you round a bit. All the pups want to get a glimpse of you. Father, you are going to rescue them all."
"I hope so," said Pongo earnestly, wondering more and more how he was going to manage it.
"I told them you would, but they've been pretty nervous. I'll just send the word round that they can count on you."
He whispered to a pup at the end of a row, and the word travelled like wind over a cornfield. There was barely a sound that a human ear could have heard, except a couple of tail thumps instantly repressed. All knew they must not give away the fact that Pongo was in their midst, and when he went silently along the rows, there was scarcely a movement, but he could feel great waves of love and trust rolling towards him. And suddenly, all the pups were real and living for him, not just a problem he had to face. He felt as if he were the father of them all, and he knew that he could never desert them. He felt a special sympathy for the big pups in the two back rows. Some of them were fully half-grown, young dogs rather than puppies, lollipy creatures with clumsy feet. They made him remember his own not very far away youth. He wondered how long their skins would be safe from Cruella. Would she have the patience to wait much longer? Did the big pups know that danger drew closer every day? Something in their eyes told him they did, and many of them had been in this horrible place for months without hope, until Lucky had spread the news that his father and mother were coming. Proud Lucky now, taking his father along the rows of hero-worshipping pups. Blissfully happy, Mrs. sat with her children clustered about her. She had eyes only for them, but they were determined she should not miss the television. She had never seen it before, Mr. and Mrs. Dearly did not care for it, and found it difficult to follow. The pups did not follow it completely, as they had not yet learned enough human words, but they liked the little moving figures, and watched in the perpetual hope of seeing dogs on the screen.
"Can we have it when we get back home?"
said the cad pig. "Indeed you shall, my darling," said Mrs. Somehow the Dearlys must be made to buy a set. Pongo had now silently met all the pups. He told Lucky he would like to have a good look at the Baddens, so Lucky took him a little way up the back staircase, where they could see without being noticed. No one would have guessed that Saul and Jasper Badden were brothers. Saul was heavy and dark, with a forehead so low that his bushy eyebrows often got tangled with his matted hair. Jasper was thin and fair, with a chin so sharp and pointed that it had worn holes in all his shirts, not that he had many. Both brothers looked very dirty.
"They never change their awful old clothes," whispered Lucky, "and they never wash. I don't think they're real humans, Father. Is there such a thing as a half-human?"
Pongo could well believe it after seeing the Baddens, but he couldn't imagine what their non-human half was. It was no animal he'd ever seen.
"Have they ill-treated any of you?" he asked anxiously. "No, they're too frightened of being bitten," said Lucky. "They're terrible cowards. Some of the big pups did think of attacking them, but there seemed no way of getting out. And if they'd killed the Baddens, there would have been no one to feed us. Oh, Father, how glad I am you've come."
Pongo licked his son's ear. Pups, like boys, do not like fathers to be too sentimental. Mothers are different. But this was a very private moment. Then they went and sat with Mrs. and the family. It seemed strange that they could all be so peaceful right in the enemy's camp. Gradually, the Pongo's puppies fell asleep, all except Lucky, Patch, and the Cadpig. Lucky was not sleepy. Patch was, but stayed awake because the Cadpig was awake. And the Cadpig stayed awake because she was crazy about television. Many of the big pups, too, were lying down to sleep, stretching luxuriously, feeling for the first time since they'd been imprisoned in Hell Hall that there was someone they could rely on. Pongo had come, and Mrs. too. They had looked at her shyly, quite understanding that she must care for her own children first, but hoping she would have a little time for them later. Some of them could hardly remember their mothers, but the younger pups could remember theirs, and they were not sleeping. Slowly, silently, they were inching their way towards Mrs. She had been watching the television, beginning to get the hang of it, with the Cadpig's help. Then some tiny sound, close at hand, brought her attention back to her family. But the sound had not come from her family. There were now nearly 30 puppies, not so very much bigger than her own, just a few feet away, all staring at her, hopefully. "Goodness, they're grubby," was her first thought. "Didn't their mothers teach them to wash themselves?" Then she felt a pang of pity. What mother had any of them now? She smiled at them all, and they wrinkled their little noses in a return smile. Then she looked beyond them to the larger pups. Some of the half-grown girls reminded her of herself at their age. So slim, so silly. They knew how to wash themselves, but there were many things they didn't know, many ways in which they needed a mother's advice. And suddenly, all the puppies were her puppies. She was their mother, just as Pongo had felt he was their father. And indeed, the younger ones, creeping closer and closer to her, were now so mingled with her own that she could scarcely tell where her little family ended and her larger family began. Drowsiness spread through the warm red room. Even the Baddon brothers dozed. They did not much like the programme that was on the television and wanted to be fresh for their very favourite programme, which was due later. Even Mrs. slept a little, knowing that Pongo would keep watch. At last, only 3 pairs of eyes were open. Pongo was wide awake, thinking, thinking. Lucky was wide awake, for he thought of himself as a sentry who must not sleep on duty. And the Cadpig was wide awake, watching her lovely, lovely television. Suddenly, there was a thunder of thumps on the front door. The sleeping pups awoke in alarm. The Baddon brothers lumbered to their feet and stumbled towards the door. But before they got there, it had been flung open. Outside, against the moonlit sky, stood a figure in a long white cloak. It was Cruella de Vil. For a few seconds, she stared into the dimly lit room. Then she shouted, "Saul, Jasper, turn off that television and turn on the light." "We can't turn on the light because we've no electric bulbs left," said Saul Baddon. "When the telly finishes, we go to bed." "And if we turn the telly off, there'll be no light at all," said Jasper Baddon. "Well, turn the sound off anyway," said Cruella angrily. Jasper did as he was told, and the little figures moving on the screen were suddenly voiceless. The Cadpig yapped indignantly. Mrs., who was crouching low in the midst of her family, instantly hushed her. Pongo also crouched low, got ready to spring at Cruella if she attacked any pup. But she seemed scarcely to notice any of them. Those near her shrank back as she strode into the room. "I've got a job for you, my lads," she said to the Baddons. "The pups must be killed tonight, every single one of them." The Baddons gaped at her.
"But they're not big enough to be made into fur coats yet," said Saul.
The largest ones are, and the little ones can be made into gloves. Anyway, they've got to die before someone finds them. There's been so much in the papers about the Dearlys dogs. All England's on the hunt for Dalmatians.
But how could anyone find them here? Said Jasper Badden. Why can't they just stay on, growing bigger and bigger?
It's too risky, said Cruella. Someone might hear them yapping and tell the police. My husband's going to ship the skins abroad, except the ones I keep for my own coat. I shall have it reversible. Persian lamb on one side and Dalmatian dog the other, and wear the dog inside until people forget about the Dearlys pups. When that happens, I'll collect another lot, and we'll start our Dalmatian fur farm again. But this lot must be got rid of quickly.
How? Said the Baddens, both together.
Any way you like. Poison them, drown them, hit them on the head. Have you any chloroform in the larder?
Not a drop, said Saul Badden. And no ether either. We can't afford luxuries, growled Jasper Badden.
Drown them, then.
Dogs can swim, said Saul Badden. Anyway, the pond's less than a foot deep.
Then you must hit them on the head, said Cruella.
Saul Badden had gone pale.
What? Hit 97 pups on the head, he said shakily. We couldn't do it. Have pity, Mrs. Deville. We'd be wore out.
Listen, said Cruella Deville. I don't care how you kill the little beasts. Hang them, suffocate them, drop them off the roof. Good gracious, there are dozens of lovely ways. I only wish I'd time to do the job myself.
Couldn't you make time, Mrs. Deville? Said Jasper. You do it so beautifully. It'd be a pleasure to watch you.
Cruella shook her head. I've got to get back to London. Then a fiendish look came into her eyes. Here's an idea for you. Shut them up without food, and then they'll kill each other.
But they make such horrible noise about it, said Saul Badden. We'd never be able to hear the telly.
Besides, they damage each other's skins, said Cruella. That would ruin their value. You must kill them carefully. Then you can start the skinning.
But we can't skin them, wailed Jasper. We don't know how.
My husband will show you, said Cruella. We'll both drive down tomorrow night, and we shall count the bodies. Just remember that, will you? If you've let even one pup escape, I'll turn you out of Hell Hall. Now, you'd better get busy. Good night.
Fortunately, few of the pups knew enough human to understand Cruella's words fully, but they all felt she was evil. And as she made her way to the door, she aimed a kick at a small pup who was dangerously close to her. It was more frightened than hurt, but it gave a loud wail of anguish. Several of the bigger pups snarled indignantly at Cruella. Lucky, remembering the time he'd nibbled her ear, barked out hastily,
"Don't bite her, chaps! She tastes hot!"
So Cruella got to the door, unhurt. She flung it open, and the moonlight shone on her black and white hair and her absolutely simple white mink cloak. Then she looked back at the room full of puppies.
"Goodbye, you horrid little beasts," she said. "I shall like you so much better when you're skins instead of pups. And I shall simply love the ones who are made into my own coat. Ha! How I'm looking forward to it."
They saw her walk out past the pond which reflected the black house, and on to the great iron gates, which she unlocked and locked again behind her. Then, through the silent winter night, came the sound of a powerful car driving away, followed by one strident blast from the loudest motor horn in England. How well Pongo and Mrs. remembered that terrifying sound. It took them back to the happy evening when they had stood beside the striped black and white car on the outer circle. How safe and contented they'd been then, little guessing what dangers lay ahead. Jasper Badden hurriedly shut the front door, saying,
"If we've got to do the pups in, we better keep them all in one place."
Pongo felt stunned. If only he could think. If only the sheepdog were there to advise him. Mrs. whispered, "If you wish to attack those villains, I will help you, Pongo." Lucky said quickly,
"They always carry knives."
Pongo's brain was beginning to work. "If we attack them, they may kill us," he whispered to Mrs. "And then there'll be no one to help the pups. Quiet. Let me think." The Baddens were talking together in low grunts.
"One thing's certain," said Jasper. "We can't do it tonight. We shall miss What's My Crime."
It was their very favourite television programme. Two ladies and two gentlemen in faultless evening dress had to guess the crime committed by a lady or gentleman in equally faultless evening dress. Stern moralists said this programme was causing a crime wave and filling the prisons because people committed crimes in the hope of being chosen as contestants.
But crime is usually waving, and the prisons are usually full. So probably what's my crime had not made much difference. Both the Baddens longed to appear as contestants, but they knew they would never be chosen unless they committed a really original crime, and they'd never been able to think of one.
"We could kill the pups after what's my crime, Jasper," said Saul. "We ought to do it tonight while they're sleepy. They'll be more dangerous when they're wide awake."
"It's a nuisance, that's what it is," said Jasper. "And whatever way we do it, we shall be exhausted. First the killing and then the skinning."
"Maybe we'll get the knack of the skinning," said Saul. "Then we can skin while we watch the telly."
"Still, 97 pups," said Jasper.
Then a wild gleam came into his eyes.
"Saul, I bet no one else has ever murdered 97 Dalmatians. It might do the trick for us. It might get us on to what's my crime."
"Know who you're talking," said Saul Baddon. "You and me in evening dress with carnations in our buttonholes and all England watching us. But we must think out some really striking way of doing our crime. Could we skin them alive?"
"They'd never keep still," said Jasper. "What about boiling them?"
Pongo whispered to Mrs.
"We shall have to attack. It's our only hope."
"I'll get the biggest pups to help you," said Lucky quietly. "We'll all help. I can bite quite well."
And then something happened. The cadpig, whose eyes were fixed on the silent television screen, gave three short, sharp barks. No human ear would have known that those barks meant, "What's my crime?" But the Baddon brothers, startled by the noise, looked towards the cadpig and, in doing so, noticed the television screen. Saul Baddon let out a roar of rage. Jasper Baddon gave a howl of misery. It was on. "What's my crime?" But without any sound, of course. They were missing it, their favourite of all programmes, and just when, for the first time, they had hopes of appearing on it. They hurled themselves at the television set. Saul turned the sound on full blast. Jasper adjusted the picture. Then they flung themselves down on their mattresses, grunting with delight.
"They won't stir for the next half hour," whispered Lucky.
At last, Pongo's brain sprang into full action. Instantly, he whispered to Lucky,
"March the pups out to the stable yard. Your mother and I will mount guard over the Baddons."
Lucky whispered,
"If we could go out through the larder, we could eat tomorrow's breakfast on our way. That's the door by the fireplace. It's bolted, but I expect you can unbolt it, can't you, Father?"
Pongo had never even tried to unbolt a door, but he had seen the sheepdog do it.
"Yes, Lucky," he said firmly. "I can unbolt it."
They tiptoed across the kitchen. Then Pongo stood on his hind legs and took the bolt in his teeth. It would not budge. He rested his teeth and took a good look at the bolt in the light from the fire. He saw the knob was turned down and would have to be raised before the bolt would slide.
"Now we shan't be long," he said to Lucky,
and again took the knob in his teeth. He raised it, tried to slide it. Still, it would not slide. He thought, "Lucky will lose confidence in me," and he dragged and dragged until he thought his teeth would break. Then he began to fear that if the bolt did shoot back, it would make a loud noise. Just then, there was a burst of applause from the television. Someone had guessed a contestant. He'd stolen 200 bath plugs from hotels. Pongo made a desperate effort. The bolt shot back. The larder door swung open.
"I knew you'd do it, Father,"
said Lucky proudly.
"Just a matter of knowing how,"
said Pongo, running his tongue round his teeth to make sure they were all still there. A cold draught came from the larder. It had been the dairy when Hell Hall was a farm, and there were wooden slats instead of windows. The moonlight shining in through the slats made bright stripes on the stone floor. Meat for the puppy's breakfast was already set out in long troughs, because the Baddons hated working in the early morning. There were small troughs for the little pups, and big ones for the larger pups. Pongo said to Lucky,
"Wait until I get back to your mother. Then, while she and I stand ready to attack the Baddons, march all the pups in here. Tell them no pup is to eat until the last pup has a place at a trough. I will join you then, and give the word to start eating."
It was remarkable how quickly the pups left the kitchen under Sergeant Lucky's whispered directions. Row after row marched out like children leaving a school hall after prayers, except that the big pups left first as they were nearest the door. Pongo and Mrs. watched the Baddons anxiously, for the hundreds of little toenails made a clitter-clatter on the kitchen floor, and there were a few scuffles, snuffles, and snorts, though never even the smallest bark, for the pups guessed their lives depended on their silence. But the Baddens had eyes and ears for nothing but television. Lucky left his own brothers and sisters to the last, and last of all to leave was the Cadpig. She was an intelligent little puppy and quite understood that she had to escape, but oh, how she hated leaving the television. She went out backwards, still staring at the screen. Then Pongo and Mrs. sped swiftly and silently across the big red kitchen. They looked back from the larder door and saw that the Baddens had not stirred. "How much longer will What's My Crime last?" whispered Pongo.
20 minutes,
said the Cadpig promptly and wistfully. Pongo and Mrs. closed the larder door. The bolt on the inside was low down and easy to manage. Pongo shot it home at once, while the pups looked on admiringly. Every pup had its place at a trough, but not one lick of food had been eaten.
1, 2, 3, feed,
commanded Pongo. In 59 seconds flat, every scrap of food had been eaten.
But what about you and Mother? Said Lucky. I think I can find the Baddens' Sunday dinner.
He found it on a shelf. 2 steaks, rather poor grade, but Pongo and Mrs. swiftly ate them. Then Pongo gave troops the right to forage and led a search through the larder. Everything eatable was eaten, the big pups sharing with the little pups most fairly.
Anything in that cupboard? Said Pongo at last. Only coke for the central heating furnace, said Lucky. Well, the Baddens won't find anything to eat tomorrow, will they?
Let them eat coke, said Pongo. The entire meal had taken nearly 5 minutes. Pongo now felt he must get his troops out of Hell Hall as fast as possible. There'd be no time to think out plans for the future. He was counting on the Colonel's advice. All that could be done now was to lead the pups to the folly. The outer door of the larder was easily opened. Then across the old orchard they went, and in at the door which the Colonel had so thoughtfully propped open. Mrs. gave one backward glance at Black Hell Hall under the full moon. What would the Baddens do when they found not one pup in the kitchen? There was not room for 97 pups on the ground floor of the folly, nor would there have been in the crowded upstairs rooms. So Pongo marched everyone out onto the heath. As the last pup marched out, the sheepdog arrived. At first he thought Pongo had recklessly begun the escape too soon, but when he heard the true facts, he praised Pongo highly, and was particularly pleased that all pups had been fed before escaping.
That was Sergeant Lucky's idea, said Pongo proudly.
Good work, Sergeant Major, said the Colonel.
But where are we to go? Asked Mrs. anxiously. Look, the puppies are shivering. They were indeed, for though it was not freezing, it seemed terribly cold to them all after the warm kitchen. The sheepdog looked worried, not that anyone could see this, as his expressions were always hidden by hair.
What was he to do at a moment's notice with 97 Dalmatian puppies and 2 full-grown Dalmatians?
At last he said,
Our big barn for the night, anyway. Pups can keep warm in the straw. It's only 1/2 mile across the heath.
1/2 mile? How little to Pongo and Mrs. How much, how terribly much to the tiny Cadpig. After even a few hundred yards, Pongo was in despair about the long journey to London, which lay ahead. The big pups ran along happily. The medium-sized pups did quite well. Even most of the smaller pups looked as if they were capable of a reasonably long walk. But the smallest pups of all, Pongo's own family, how were they to walk over 70 miles? Lucky, Patch, Roly-Poly, and the other boys struggled along bravely. But the girls stumbled and panted and had to have many rests. As for the Cadpig, she would never have reached the farm at all if the sheepdog had not given her a lift. He lay down, and she climbed onto his back and held onto his long hair with her teeth. Even so, she nearly slipped off twice. She could never stay on our smooth backs, said Mrs. to Pongo. If only I could wheel her in a doll's perambulator.
You couldn't walk to London on your hind legs, said Pongo, even if we had a perambulator.
At last, they reached the big barn at the back of the farm where the Colonel lived. The tired pups snuggled into the hay and straw, and instantly fell asleep. Pongo, Mrs. and the Colonel stood at the door, trying to make plans.
The Colonel said, I can't keep you here long. You'd be found. Besides, I couldn't feed so many. We must get you to London by easy stages, just 1 few miles a day.
But where shall we sleep?
Where shall we find food? Said Pongo anxiously.
It will need tremendous organization, said the Colonel. I hope to arrange the first stage at once, by midnight barking. I must bark some distance from the farm, or I shall wake my pets.
Pongo offered to bark with him, but the sheepdog would not hear of it.
You two must rest. It's now nearly 10 o'clock. If my plan goes well, I shall wake you at 4, when there will still be over 3 hours of darkness. That will be long enough to get you to the place I have in mind.
But my smallest daughter is so weak, said Mrs. How can she make any journey? The Colonel smiled, not that anyone could see that.
I have a plan for the little lass, he said. Now, sleep, sleep, both of you.
So Pongo and Mrs. went into the dark barn and sniffed out their own family. Only Lucky stirred. He said he was trying to sleep with one eye open, so as to be on guard. You close both eyes, said Mrs. firmly. And Lucky did, quite happy now his parents were there to take charge. What would happen if we were found here? Asked Mrs. Surely the people at the farm are kind. They wouldn't hurt us. Pongo had been thinking about this. He guessed that as there'd been so much in the papers about himself and Mrs. and their family, they might all get safely returned to the Dearleys. But the other puppies, what would happen to them? Even the dear, kind Dearleys would not take in 82 puppies they did not know. The poor things would be sent to a police station. Anything might happen to them. But if once the Dearleys saw them, then all the puppies would suddenly belong to the Dearleys, just as they had suddenly seemed to belong to him in the dark kitchen. Somehow he must get them all to London. Mrs. felt just the same, but she did not see how the Cadpig and some of her sisters would make the journey. Well, sleep now, said Pongo, giving her a loving lick. Are you glad you didn't, after all, have to bite a human? The Baddens are no more human than Cruella is, said Mrs. Still, I'm glad I didn't have to soil my teeth. They would not have fallen asleep so easily if they had known what the sheepdog had just seen. Across the heath, lanterns were moving. The Baddens were out, searching for the missing puppies. Pongo was dreaming he was back in Regent's Park running after a stick thrown by Mr. Daly when a light tap on his shoulder woke him. It was Lieutenant Willow. The Colonel's compliments, and would you and your lady please come to him? Mrs. was sleeping peacefully. Pongo woke her gently, wondering what dream she would be leaving, and if the dark barn would look as strange to her as it had to him a moment earlier. She sprang up at once, dazed and anxious. Ah, well, said the cat soothingly. Food and shelter are arranged for 2 days ahead. Reception for the midnight barking was excellent. Please follow me now. She made no mention of the Badden brothers with their lanterns searching the heath. It was still quite dark as they left the barn and crossed the farmyard. The cat led them to the back door of a large white farmhouse. Help me to push the door, she said. The Colonel has unbolted it. The door opened easily. They went through a kitchen and along a passage, at the end of which was an open door and a glimmer of light. The cat led them through the doorway, and they found themselves in a nursery, lit by a nightlight. At the far end, the sheepdog stood beside a little painted bed, in which was a very wide-awake 2-year-old boy.
This is my pet Tommy, said the Colonel. He very much wants to meet you.
Pongo and Mrs. went to the little boy, and he patted them both. Then he made some odd chuckling noises. They did not sound like human, nor did they sound like dog. But the sheepdog seemed to understand them, and Tommy seemed to understand what the sheepdog answered. Pongo decided this was quite a new language, half dog, half human.
Tommy wishes to lend you something, said the Colonel. He knows how much you need it and is most anxious to help you. See, here it is.
Pongo and Mrs. then saw a little wooden cart, painted blue. It was made like a real farm cart, with 4 high wheels and a wooden railing all round it to keep the hay in. It was full of hay now. At the front was a long piece of wood with a wide crossbar at the end of it, so that Tommy could drag the cart about.
You can choose 2 pups exactly the right size, said the Colonel, and they can use the long piece of wood as a shaft in between them and take the crossbar in their mouths. Then they can pull the cart forward, and if needed, pups at the back can push with their noses.
Your smallest daughter can travel comfortably in the hay, and any puppy who's tired can sit beside her and take a rest.
Pongo and Missus examined the pretty cart delightedly. They were too big to get between it and the crossbar themselves, but they felt sure plenty of the bigger parts would fit.
"But does he really want us to take it?" asked Missus.
The sheepdog then spoke to Tommy, who nodded his head again and again while talking his extraordinary language.
"His name and address are painted on the side," said the sheepdog, "and he would be glad if it can be returned one day. But if that isn't possible, he will quite understand."
"If we ever get home, I feel sure Mr. Dearly will return it," said Pongo. "Please tell Tommy how very grateful we are."
The sheepdog translated this to Tommy, who smiled more than ever and made more chuckling noises.
"He says he is pleased you are pleased and would like to see all the puppies. I think it would be safe to march them all past his window when you leave, which should be soon now."
So they said goodbye to Tommy, and then the sheepdog, going backwards, pulled the cart along the passage and out through the back door. He had quite a job.
"It's lucky my little pet sleeps on the ground floor," he said. "It's because our stairs are so steep. I could never have got this cart down them."
They went back to the barn and woke the pups, and all the bigger ones came outside and tried the cart on for size. The moon was lower now, but still gave plenty of light. One family of eight fitted perfectly, and a dozen other pups could manage quite well. So Pongo arranged that all these should travel close to the cart and take it in turns to pull it, two at a time. The cad pig was enchanted and settled down in the hay so that pups could practice pulling. While this was happening, Pongo was told the plans made by Midnight Barking. Only 5 miles was to be travelled before dawn, which would not be for over 3 hours, to a village where a friend of the Colonel's lived at a bakery.
"And next door is a butcher's, so food will be all right," said the Colonel. "Then you'll do another 5 miles as soon as it's dark tomorrow. But my friend will tell you all about that. I hope to get you to London in 10 or 12 days, billeting you where you can be safely hidden and fed. The last stages of the march will be the most difficult, but there are warehouses if we can get in touch with their watchdogs. There's a Great Dane somewhere near Hampstead working on that already. Fine fellow. I hear he's a Brigadier General."
10 days or even longer. Missus felt her heart sink. "Pongo," she said suddenly, "when is Christmas Day?"
Day after tomorrow," said the Colonel. Bless me, it's tomorrow, because it's Christmas Eve already, even if it isn't light yet. Don't worry, Mrs. Pongo. You shall have some Christmas dinner."
But it was not food Missus was thinking about, but the Dearlys, all alone for Christmas. Sometimes she forgot them for an hour or two, but never for very long. She thought now of that last evening when she'd rested her head on Mrs. Dearly's knee, trying to make her understand, and of the warm, white drawing-room, where there was to have been a Christmas tree with presents for the 3 dogs and the 15 pups. Missus had heard the Dearlys planning it. Pongo guessed his wife's thoughts, which was easy to do because his own were much the same. "Never mind, Missus," he said. "We'll be home by next Christmas." The pups, who were to take turns at pulling the little blue cart, were now quite good at it.
"Then off you go," said the Colonel. "But first, our cows have asked you in to have a drink with them."
He led Pongo, Missus, and all the pups into the dim cowshed, where the hay still smelt of summer weather. The head cows, Blossom and Clover, were waiting to welcome them and tell them how to drink at the milk bar. The pups found this easy, especially those who could remember being fed by their mothers, though the smaller pups had to stand on their hind legs and be supported by other pups. The long, warm drink of milk made a splendid breakfast. At last, after all their kind hostesses had been thanked, it was time to start. Tommy stood at his window, peering into the moonlight, watching the march past. Pongo and Missus wrinkled their noses at him in their best smile. Every pup turned its head, except the cad pig, who lay on her back in the hay-filled cart and waved all her 4 paws. Pongo said to Missus, "How different Tommy is from the bad little boy who threw a stone at us." Missus said, "The bad little boy was only bad because he had never known dogs." And she was probably right. The Colonel took them to the crossroads and started them on their way.
"I wish I could come with you, but I've a job to do," he said.
Then he and the cat, who was riding on his back, said goodbye hastily and went off so fast that Pongo had to bark his thanks after them. The Colonel barked back that Sergeant Major Lucky could now be a lieutenant, then galloped out of sight. Pongo stared in astonishment, wondering what job had to be done in such a hurry. It was a long time before he learned the truth. The Colonel had just been informed by Lieutenant Willow that the Badden brothers, having failed to find the puppies on the heath, were now on the outskirts of the village, less than half a mile behind the Dalmatians. He could think of only one thing to do, and he set out to do it with great pleasure. He galloped until he saw the Badden's lanterns ahead of him. Then he told the cat to get off his back. The minute she was off, he hurled himself at the Baddens and bit both brothers in both legs. Seldom can four legs have been bitten so fast by one dog. The Baddens howled with rage, fear, and pain, dropped their lanterns, and limped back to Hell Hall as quickly as possible. It is difficult to limp well when you are lame in both legs. They never knew what bit them. They only knew it bit hard.
"Good work, Colonel," said Lieutenant Willow.
"I'm promoting you to captain," said the sheepdog.
Then he gave a modest little cough and added,
"Oh, by the way, I've just made myself a brigadier general."